and this is forever. Written late in Julie's junior year at Highview Academy, this story is based on Highview characters rather than Riverdale characters. Strangely, the main characters are not even among Julie's actual best friends at Highview, but are among the most popular and prominent Highview students. Julie picks up on what she sees as an interesting storyline to write about. Part 1. Bonnie and Jim. The night was cool and crisp and bright, and the crescent moon glimmered on the grassy meadow. Hand in hand, a boy and girl strolled across the carpet of green. The June breeze blew softly through her satiny hair and wafted the refreshing scent of peach blossoms. He reached for a small bough of the delicate flowers and broke it off for her as she smiled affectionately. "For you, my pretty one," he said. "Jim," she said, her soft voice carrying an almost serious tone, "did you ever wonder how two people can be so happy?" Slightly surprised, for Bonnie seldom was so bold in philosophizing, he squeezed her hand tightly. "And why is everything so good and beautiful to those same two?" "Because," she said simply, "God made it that way." "And," he added, "God is love." Bonnie was silent, not knowing quite how to interpret his words. Was he really in love with her? Was that why he said that? Now they came to the road that led back to Bonnie's house. "When we get back," he said, his voice pleasant but businesslike, "let's practice some more for tomorrow." Tomorrow. That was the talent festival, how could she forget? 4 weeks Jim had been practicing for this big day. Tomorrow would decide his future. Her mind went back to many years ago, in fact, almost as long as she could remember, she had known Jim. There had been the Saturday night motion pictures at the college, and the 8th grade banquet, their first actual date. Then there were the bike rides and the picnics in the park, and the many, many times he had come over to practice. Through the years their musical skills, and their friendship, had grown together. The clock was striking 10 as Bonnie's slim fingers trickled over the piano keyboard and the last notes from Jim's clarinet faded into silence. "Very good." She applauded and grinned. "You're the one they should clap for," he said. "I couldn't do it without you." He put the instrument in its case. When she rose from the piano stool, she felt his hand touch her waist lightly. "You're a good girl," he whispered. Just then there was the sound of a hot rod motor and brakes screeching into the driveway. "Oh," she said, "Johnny must be home." "Your twin," he teased. "This early on a Saturday night." They laughed, and then Jim opened the door. "I'll be by about 2 o'clock tomorrow," he said. "Okay." She nodded. "Good night, Jim." Minutes later, Bonnie heard the back door slam and her brother's footsteps in the kitchen. She entered the kitchen and found him raiding the refrigerator. "Oh, hi, sis." He looked up sheepishly as he brought out a couple of two-day-old donuts. "Well, hello, Romeo," she said, sitting down. "Who did you take out?" He pulled out a chair across from her and took a big bite from a donut. "Rene," he said coolly. "Johnny." Bonnie gasped. He grinned. "What's the matter?" She giggled. "You little stinker." "She's quite a girl," he said, dreamily staring past his sister. "But what's happened to Ken?" she asked, ignoring Johnny's mood. "Oh, I think he's going back with Cherie," was his answer. "Well, it's about time. I hope it lasts this time. But, I don't know," she said thoughtfully. "It's happened so many times. It's happened so many times." Yes, she remembered when Rene once had Bonnie's own Jim. It was only last year when Bonnie and Jim had drifted apart. That was a strange world, that world without Jim. She remembered the unfeelingness and emotion, the independence yet mixed upness of it all. Even now she halfway smiled as she saw herself slam a locker in a moment of fierce emotion, so unlike her gentle nature, and the times he had come over to practice while he was still going with Rene. Bonnie had been so cold, so different from the usually friendly Bonnie Mayfield. Even after Rene and Jim broke up and Jim wanted to date Bonnie again, although a few parents forbade it, her hurt pride made her act like she really didn't want to go out with him, anyway. He had tried to convince her she was his best girl, but then when he walked to school with Rene the very next day, that did it. "Are you, Bonnie?" Johnny's voice interrupted her reminiscing, and his voice carried a tone of urgency as if he had asked her before. Oh, she came back to reality. Am I what? Playing for gym tomorrow, he finished. She nodded as she rose from her chair, yawning. Night, Johnny, she said, wandering toward her room. Part 2. The semi-finalists. Morning dawned cool and cheerful. Bonnie stretched and opened her pretty blue eyes. 6:15, the clock said. She yawned, turned over, and the next thing she knew the warm sunbeams were shining into her face and someone was rapping loudly on her bedroom door. Who is it? Bonnie called in a raspy half-asleep voice. It's just me, Bonnie, returned a feminine voice. Oh, come on in, Carol, she said, getting out of bed. A vivacious curly-headed contemporary walked in and flopped on a chair. My, but you're up bright and early this morning. And so wide awake. Bonnie smiled and rubbed her eyes. What time is it? Almost 10:30, Carol answered. Are you going to play for gym this afternoon? Yes. Bonnie started. And I've got to get the house cleaned and my homework done before 2 o'clock. With that, she got dressed hurriedly while Carol talked on. I just wondered if I could borrow your little pink purse for tonight, she said. Nick called and asked me out tonight. How neat. Bonnie was really glad for her friend, she had tried so hard to be the girl that he wanted. Sure. We're going double with Ken and Cherie, they're back together now. The guys are taking us out to eat, then we'll come by the high school later to see who wins the talent festival. Carol went on and on excitedly, and then suddenly she stopped. You're lucky, Bonnie. Bonnie stopped brushing her hair. Me, she chuckled. She could see her reflection in the mirror and the things behind her in the room. She was an ordinary plain-looking girl, living in an average house. Goodness, why, she asked. Carol shrugged. Well, Jim. You can be so sure of him. Bonnie knew that neither Carol nor Cherie were sure of Nick or Ken. But even if you didn't have Jim, Carol went on, I don't think it would change your cheerful personality. And it was true. Bonnie's sparkling eyes and contagious smile on her long freckled face, her willingness to work, the interest she took in anybody she talked to, this made her very attractive to all who knew her. Well, don't try too hard, Bonnie said, seeming to sense that Carol had been comparing herself and Nick with Bonnie and Jim. I didn't pay any attention to Jim, even after he quit Renee. That's what puzzles me, Carol said, shaking her head as she got up. Well, I've got to be going. I promised Cherie I'd be over for lunch. Bonnie fetched the little pink purse, then Carol was gone. The time passed quickly. The house was sparkling clean, and Bonnie, in a fresh cotton print, was just closing her American government textbook when the doorbell rang. Have time to go over it once? Jim asked, stepping inside. Sure. She smiled sweetly. Aren't you scared? Tell you a secret, he said. I'm petrified. When they finished, Jim escorted her out to his car. It all seemed too familiar. Renee might have sat in the center next to Jim, but Bonnie didn't. Ever since their first date after the Renee episode, Jim and Bonnie had been as good friends as ever, but nothing more. It was only recently that he had even hinted that she was someone special, that is, except for the time when she had asked him, but why aren't you taking Renee to the ASB social? And he had answered simply, because I like you better. Talented, handsome, athletic Jim Barker was a silent, almost mysterious easygoing gentleman, that was the way she liked him. There was only one short year before they'd be going to college, but of course quite a few years before marriage. Marriage. How could she dare think of it? She glanced at Jim, whose serene steady eyes were intent on the road and on his driving. He smiled warmly, but if he had sensed any of Bonnie's thoughts he didn't let on. The people were already filling the assembly hall when Jim and Bonnie arrived. He tuned up his instrument. Then they went backstage to wait for their turn on the program. Many others performed their numbers, classic and comedy, fast and slow, light and dramatic, mostly amateur, but some were superb. Among them was Jim's beautiful and difficult, Fantasia in D minor. Finally, at 4:45, the MC spoke. Our result from the applause meter shows which 5 of the young people you have chosen as the best. Will you semi-finalists please come back as I call your names? Jim Barker, the audience broke into applause, and Bonnie gave a little squeal of delight. She was too happy to care who the other four were. She only heard the MC conclude, "And we'll see you again at 8 o'clock tonight when the final winners are chosen." "Oh, Jim, I'm so proud of you," she said when she had found him. He squeezed her hand affectionately for a moment as he said, "You were half of it, Angel." Then, in a completely different mood, he said, "Say, how would you like to have dinner at the Blue Rose? The fanciest restaurant in town?" "I'd love to," she said. Part 3. The Blue Rose Dining Room. Candlelight and soft music filled the Blue Rose dining room as a tuxedoed server showed Jim and Bonnie to a table for two. The setting was perfect, now it was up to Jim. Several tables away, Bonnie saw Ken and Cherie with Nick and Carol. Across the crowded room, Carol gave Bonnie a knowing look as Bonnie remembered Carol's words, "You can be so sure of him." Now Bonnie thought, "If only you knew, Carol, just how uncertain I really am just now." "What would you like, Bonnie?" It was Jim's voice that broke into her thoughts. "Oh." She looked up, half startled, first at Jim and then at the server who stood ready to take their order. When the food was served to them, Jim bowed his head and asked a blessing on the food before they ate. That was another thing about Jim, he was a Christian, the best kind, and not ashamed of it. As far as Bonnie was concerned, that made everything complete. The conversation naturally drifted to the talent festival, to what had happened and what might happen. For the past 6 years Jim had taken part in the festival, but this was the first time he had made it to the chosen five. Until now he had been relatively calm, now his intense excitement showed through. "Oh, Bonnie," he breathed. "Would it be possible that I, James Gordon Barker, could win a cup tonight?" "Of course it is," she answered sweetly. "If anybody could, you can, Jim." He sighed. "Oh, if only." "By the way," she asked, "what's in the Crystal Cup this year?" "It's a neat prize," he answered. "A full year's music lessons on any instrument from any teacher anywhere in the United States, Canada, and Europe." "Oh, boy," exclaimed Bonnie. "That's not a bad deal. And you'll have just 1 year with Professor Waldo before college, too." "Well," Jim hesitated, "I'm not so sure." "What do you mean?" asked Bonnie, sensing the seriousness in his voice, "that you're not so sure." "Bonnie," he began, "I didn't want to tell you this before, I'll be in Austria next year."
"Austria?"
Her fork stopped in midair. "Next year. You see," he explained, "Professor Waldo thinks I'm good enough to go to the Bogenhagen Academy, it's a sort of junior college, and by about Christmas of next year I should be ready for the music conservatory at the University of Vienna, so he says. But that means you won't be able to graduate with our class, then." "I know," he said. "I'll just get my diploma, and then it's back to the books. But it'll be good to get to study music there, the atmosphere and everything, you know, with the best teachers and good facilities, then maybe weekend trips to Venice or Rome." A faint smile played on his face, and there was a faraway look in his cool gray eyes. Bonnie was strangely silent. This sudden news was quite surprising and somewhat disappointing, although down deep she really wanted things to work out for Jim's best good. But she must not let Jim see her hurt. "What's first prize, in the Gold Cup?" she asked. "Oh." He came back to earth. "That one's really fabulous. They're giving away a scholarship to one of the big music colleges, University of Vienna included, plus the year's music lessons plus your choice of either a brand new instrument, piano excluded, or the price equivalent in sheet music."
"Wow," exclaimed Bonnie.
"Who's paying for all this?" "Some music association," he shrugged. "The Silver Cup is a choice between the music lessons and the scholarship. But even that would be a nice thing to take to Austria with you," she said, trying to not change the subject anymore. "But dreams like that wouldn't come true in real life, in my life." "Sure they could, Jim." Bonnie's interest was genuine. She was going to lose him, anyway. "I have faith in you. You're a semi-finalist, aren't you?"
"Yes, but look at my competition. That Mary Lind and her violin, Ted Jones on the piano, you heard them play, they're good."
"You're good, too," she spoke in mild rebuke. "Besides,
even if you don't win a cup, you've got that fine education in Austria waiting for you. Maybe. His excitement had almost turned into discouragement. Maybe. Bonnie's curiosity and sympathy were aroused at once. You'll keep this confidential, won't you, Bonnie? Jim's voice was low. His head dropped slightly, and he raised his eyes to look at her. It's just the financial part. What? Bonnie spoke with incredulity. Dr. Barker's son. Yeah, Dad's not so overenthused about me leaving home so soon. Says if I go, I have to pay my own way, every penny. You know he wanted me to get a job in his clinic next summer, then work part-time and go to New City College. Mom's all for me going, but you know how high-class the University of Vienna is, best school in all of Europe, almost. Professor Waldo said he'll do everything he can to see me put at Bogenhagen, but still I'll have it pretty rough for a while, if I don't get that scholarship. There's a chance, he added, that I might not even go. A feeling of half-hope and half-sympathy arose spontaneously in Bonnie. She looked lovingly at him, a strong husky youth but with a chivalrous tenderness. Suddenly, as she realized the growing silence, she wanted to speak, but somehow, as it rarely happened, she couldn't seem to find the right words. Finally she said, I wish the very best for you, Jim, always. And she meant it. When Jim paid the check, he and Bonnie made their way back to the school. The audience filled the hall, and dramatic floodlights shone down onto the stage. Once again, backstage, they waited with the other semi-finalists. Jim's hands were sweaty at first, Bonnie was holding one, but after the program got started, a foreign, almost weird expression came over Jim's face. There was a strange calmness in his eyes, and his hands were dry and completely relaxed. Part 4. The winners announced. When Bonnie preceded Jim onto the stage and sat down at the piano, there was a brief, tense moment before the clear, cool notes of Jim's clarinet once again drifted through the silent hall. It was just like they had always practiced it, first the plaintive melody theme, then here and there a fast, difficult run that faded into a harmonic work of art and swelled into the full, rich overtures, then once again a lone, soft voice, a colorful variation, a frilly bit, and majestic tones until the listener was in a different world. Then once again the audience swelled the applause. Backstage once more, Jim sighed silently, but Bonnie sensed his deep relief. He put his clarinet away when she touched his arm. Don't do that, she said. When they take your picture with the cup, you'll want to have your clarinet with you. She giggled a little as she spoke, and he just had to smile. You funny girl, he said, putting his finger lightly to her chin. I won't win. Jim and Bonnie, with the others who had already performed, went to sit in the audience. While the judges were deliberating, the community comedian and the music club skit made up an interesting program. But to the five, and the ones close to them, it seemed like an eternity before they decided. At long last, the MC once again stood on the stage. His voice rang, cutting through the silent hush that settled on the entire crowd. As you know, the time has come to announce our three finalists. The two remaining will automatically receive the consolation prize, the $50 check which we will send to them. Now the winner of the Crystal Cup, the music lessons, a deserving young musician, Julie Scott. There was applause as the young accordionist walked on stage to accept her prize. But Bonnie and Jim exchanged puzzled glances as if to say, was Julie that good? Well, Jim whispered to Bonnie, Ted Jones and Mary Lind are sure to get the other cups. But Bonnie said nothing. The silver cup, the MC continued, belongs to a very skilled young lady, performer of Beethoven's Intermezzo, Mary Jo Lind. Again there was applause, and Mary Lind walked on stage. As you know, Mary Jo, you have your choice between a year's music lessons and a $500 scholarship. With every word the MC spoke, Bonnie grew more and more tense. For those fleeting moments, she didn't care that Jim was going away to get his education, even though it meant losing him. Jim had to win. But now the doubts were growing in her mind, too. Ted Jones was pretty good. And the winner of this year's grand prize, the scholarship, the music lessons, and sheet music, is a young man whom I think we all will agree is worthy of the Gold Cup, a young man who is rightly a credit to our community, and whom I'm sure we can with great pride esteem this honor. Congratulations to, the MC paused drastically, and Jim had almost whispered, good for Ted, when he heard. Jim Barker. Something like a bolt of lightning struck him as he just sat, stunned, his clarinet still clutched tightly in his hand. Bonnie almost had to push him toward the stage. Then she sat, beaming, as she watched him, her Jim, standing in the spotlight. The applause was loud and long. Cameras flashed as the mayor and the principal shook hands with Jim. The program was over, and reporters flocked around Jim. Other well-meaning congratulators swarmed about him. When the crowd thinned out, someone called Bonnie to the front for a picture of the hero's piano player. But before she had time to speak to Jim, some big shot took him away to interview him or something. Even to this day, Bonnie cannot quite explain the feeling inside. Her pride of him was mingled with a bit of sarcasm and even loneliness. Mixed all together was the ego, the left-out feeling, the love, the bitterness, the sympathy, the frustration, the hopeless hope, it was all there. Like a run-down clock, the time passed until Bonnie realized, dazedly, that she stood alone just outside the door of the empty hall. Seeing Jim nowhere, she started for his car to wait for him there. Part 5. Jim's proposal. Soon Jim came and, without a word, opened the door for her, then got in on the other side and started the car. For the first time in all her life, she felt ill at ease with him. Finally she said, with a trace of enthusiasm, "Congratulations, Jim." He looked at her and smiled in recognition. "Sorry I took so long to get out, but, man, the publicity you get. I just couldn't get away." Bonnie smiled and carried on the conversation, but somehow it didn't seem the same. Presently Jim stopped the car, got out, walked around and opened Bonnie's door. He took her hand and whispered, "Want to go for a walk?" If it surprised her, she didn't show it. She got out and looked around. They were in the country, the same meadow where just 24 hours ago, they had walked hand in hand. But it seemed so long ago now, so far, far in the distant past. The moon was fuller tonight, silvering the green growing things and creating a half-mysterious, half-romantic atmosphere. The breeze barely stirred and the delicate scent of the peach blossoms was faint. Their conversation had ceased, and Bonnie, in the thick stillness, wanted to fall into Jim's arms and cry and cry. But she knew she mustn't let a teardrop escape her eyelids. Jim spoke now and Bonnie listened, not knowing exactly how she should feel about everything. "They've made plane reservations for me for some time the last of next week, so I guess this time next week I'll be in Salzburg. Professor Waldo wants me to take two summer courses. Jim would be gone in just 1 week?" She realized it, but it was not as hard as she might have expected it to be. She only looked up into his eyes, and Jim smiled. He continued talking about the courses he would take, what it would be like to study in a foreign country, the kind of teachers he might have, the books he would use, where he might work, and everything that had to do with his newly acquired future. And while he talked, so earnestly and happily, Bonnie's mixed-up feelings turned into a mutual sharing of his happiness and a mature outlook on life, her life and Jim's life, a courageous acceptance of losing him to Austria, and a genuine pride that her Jim was a master of tomorrow's musical world. Now they stood on a little knoll overlooking the meadow. To the left was the peach orchard, and to the right a little patch of woods. In the silence, they could hear the gurgling sound of a hidden brook. Jim dropped Bonnie's hand and pointed straight ahead. In the same soft expressional tone, he said, "Do you see that uncleared land, that spot of ground way over there?" Bonnie looked. "Someday," he went on, slipping his arm around her, "that land will be plowed and cultivated. And nestled between the field and the orchard will be a rustic cottage with a white picket fence and red roses. And it will be waiting for two lucky people on their way home from Vienna." At this, Bonnie looked up at him. He smiled in admiration at the innocent smile on her pretty face. His eyes showed a devoted affection just as hopeful as his dreams and as deep as the dedication to his music. "5 years," he continued, "isn't so long when two are in love. We'll date others, if you want, but I'm coming back to you, the wonderful girl who has made and will always make a wonderful life possible." "Me?" Bonnie chuckled a bit. "Make a wonderful life possible." He smiled, but his voice was still serious. Your patience in practicing so much with me and helping me to win a start toward the life I want. Besides, all the encouragement and inspiration you have brought through the years I have known you, no other girl has kept me so close to God. Another thing, and he chuckled a bit. I thought maybe you would be a little resentful because of all your hard work in getting me ready to win the Gold Cup then having everything fly away to Austria, but you just aren't like that. She blushed slightly and drew in a deep breath. How near she had been to being the very opposite, and how glad she was that she had said nothing. She felt his hand on her shoulder as he drew her closer. Bonnie, sweetheart, I love you, he said simply. 5 years, we can do it, will you marry me then? Do you love me enough to? Her voice was choked with the unspilled tears of joy. Yes, Jim, she said calmly and sweetly, I do. Darling, he whispered as his lips touched hers to seal the spoken vow. Bonnie could see in his eyes the fame, then the grassy valley, the heaven on earth for them. To him, her voice was the sound of music, the sound of a raptured theme, of church bells. He spoke again. And this is forever.